and welcome to the Sunday edition of the Big Red Bench. It is Sarah McKenzie Foley here with you for the next hour. I've got your roundup of all the day's sporting action, as well as a Six Nations debrief with Aoife O'Callaghan after Ireland secured their back-to-back titles in Dublin yesterday. You'll also be hearing from Ciara and Dieran O'Sullivan, who spoke to Dermot McCarthy about retiring from senior inter-county football action, plus lots more besides, so let's get into it. Starting with football, where Liverpool and Manchester United have gone well into extra time in their FA Cup quarter-final showdown. It is currently 3-3 and we will bring you an updated final score from that match as soon as we have it. Elsewhere, Chelsea have beaten Leicester City 4-2 at Stamford Bridge to secure their FA Cup semi-final spot. George Alderman has the full-time report.
It's finished. Chelsea 4, Leicester City 2. And what a game we had here at Stamford Bridge. Chelsea were cruising at half-time, 2-0 up, thanks to goals from Mark Cucurella and the ever-impressive Cole Palmer. They should have been further ahead. Raheem Sterling missing a penalty and a good opportunity when one-on-one with the goalkeeper. And then they let Leicester back into it at the start of the second half. A comical own goal from Axel Disasi. He was trying to pass the ball back to his own goalkeeper, but lobbed it over his head instead, and it was actually a great finish. And then there was an even better one from Leicester. Mavidi with an absolute stunner, turning Gusto inside out and carrying an effort into the far corner to give Rob Sanchez no chance in the Chelsea goal. But then things turned again in Chelsea's favour. They were initially given a penalty. Nicholas Jackson was clipped by Callum Doyle on his way through one-on-one with the keeper. VAR intervened, decided it was a free kick, but that Doyle should be shown a red card. Sterling's nightmare afternoon continued as he smashed the ball miles over the bar, and there were boos when Mudryk went off in his place. But eventually Sterling did go off, and it was one of the substitutes, Carney Chukwuemeka, who in the start of the 8th minute of added time put Chelsea 3-2 up, a 1-2 with Palmer, and a cool calm finish slotted into the bottom corner. And then another sub, Noni Madueke, finishing things off with a late stunner, wriggling past a couple of defenders and curling a brilliant effort into the top corner. Chelsea made hard work of it in the end, but they are through to the FA Cup semi-finals. It's finished Chelsea 4, Leicester City 2.
There was just one game in the Premier League this afternoon where Aston Villa were away to West Ham. It finished 1-1 and Guy Swindles has the full-time report from the London Stadium.
West Ham 1, Aston Villa 1. Antonio's diving header giving the Hammers the lead in the first half, and then Zaniolo, the substitute, tucking home from another lovely ball from Diaby to level things up. But in between, VAR has played another huge role in this match. West Ham had a goal disallowed for Ham. Ball. Antonio adjudged to have bundled the ball over with his elbow, probably the right decision. But in the 6th minute of time added on at the end of the match, West Ham had another goal ruled out, this time in far more controversial circumstances. VAR looked for a handball from Thomas Suchek for over 6 minutes, eventually deciding, despite not being able to see it, that it was a handball. So it finished West Ham 1, Aston Villa 1.
In the Scottish Premiership, Rangers' visit to Dundee was postponed because of a waterlogged pitch at Dens Park. A second inspection this morning found that the pitch was unplayable, which meant that Rangers now go into the international break 1 point behind Scottish Premiership leader Celtic, but with a game in hand. In the Women's Super League, there were 4 games down for decision today. Liverpool have won 3-1 against West Ham, while Manchester United took a 2-0 win against Bristol City. Elsewhere, Brighton lost 4-1 at home to Manchester City and Tottenham beat Leicester 1-0. In golf, Rory McIlroy is looking for a top 10 finish at the Players' Championship on the PGA Tour this evening. He lies on 10 under par and is level par after 6 holes of his final round. The Northern Irishman is in a tie for 14th, with Shane Lowry 1 further back after he shot a 6 under 66 today. Meanwhile, Seamus Power shot a 3 under round of 69 and finished on level par all around. Finally, in basketball, UCC Demons played out a dominant win against Flexichem KCYMS in the InsureMyVan.ie Super League this afternoon. The final score from the Mardike Arena was 110 points to 62. And I'm just refreshing my live score page here because it looks like, oh my goodness, okay, we've now got another goal in the game between Manchester United and Liverpool. We're at 120 plus 1 minutes. It is 4-3 Manchester United. They may have just saved themselves from going to penalties in that game. We'll keep you updated. But in the meantime, we are going to get into a Six Nations debrief with Aoife O'Callaghan. I am joined on the line now by Aoife O'Callaghan. Aoife, welcome back to the Big Red Bench. How are you feeling about that Ireland win yesterday now that you've had 24 hours to absorb it?
Oh, do you know what? It's a strange one. Do you know, I think we didn't make it easy for ourselves. You know, I think we very much went in knowing that Scotland would kind of step up to us and would give us a challenge. But I don't think we kind of went in quite nervous, I felt, or something. I think we kind of held back for the first kind of 20 minutes. Obviously, you know, losing Keenan in the warm-up or whatever, you know, was not ideal. And having to put someone in like Larmour, I know he does technically have the experience, but for him to have not had kind of solid game time in God knows how long. And I know he's probably been in with camp and been training and knows things, but I think kind of putting him in it, I think there's a bit of protection of him, I think I saw kind of throughout the game. You know, and a couple of times where, you know, if it was Keenan, he'd crash up, he'd hit a straight line, and Larmour kind of wasn't doing that. So I think that maybe rattled Ireland maybe a small bit, trying to fix things going in. But I think, you know, we did play a really good game. I think we kind of came alive the last 20 minutes. You know, I think we played a really good style of rugby. Obviously, Jack missing those kicks wasn't great. But at the same time, if you looked at him throughout the game, you know, for someone who was put into that 10 jersey, you know, off the back of Johnny Sexton, the icon leaving, you know, there was a lot of pressure on his shoulders. And I think even though there has been people coming out and kind of speaking against him a small bit, I think he really did, you know, stand up to that. And like, his kicking wasn't ideal, but I think at the same time, if you look at the background work he did, you know, he wasn't afraid to hit rocks, he wasn't afraid to, you know, man that field and call the ball and take in contact. You know, he really stepped up to the point. And maybe there was a couple of times I did think that they did make substitutions maybe a little early. I think I would have liked to see Nash maybe on a little bit longer.
Yeah, I agree.
You know, I think great to have Gary Ringrose back and everything, having back in the fray, and I think he did play well, but I just think maybe like he held back a small bit. I think Nash would have been kind of really great to have on physically in those kind of closing stages. Other than that, I think we're really good. We really shut down Dún Van der Merwe. You know, he's been Scotland's star for kind of the Six Nations, you know. We made Scotland panic a little bit. You know, even Finn Russell, I think there was a couple of times Finn Russell, I think, didn't expect us to be so like up in their face a little bit. But at the same time, I think there were some silly decisions. You know, it didn't really show up on TV, but it was raining and it was humid. And, you know, they just looked like the ball was probably a bar of soap for a bit. There was a couple of knock-ons, a couple of strip balls that probably shouldn't have happened. But again, you can't really control conditions. But other than that, I think I'm happy with how they played. But I do think there probably needs to be a bit of changes maybe going forward, you know, just to freshen up the team now. You know, I know there's word of Pete possibly retiring, which as the Peter O'Mahony fan, and having him live quite close to me is a very sad thing to hear. But I think it's from seeing like how Jack got on, how Calvin got on, how, you know, Joe McCarthy even got on, I think the future is really bright for Irish rugby. I don't think there's anything major to really be worrying about as these icons like, you know, like Pete and like Keith has gone, Johnny, you know, I don't think we should be worrying that we are losing legends, you know, at this stage. So I think future's bright for Irish rugby. And I think Scotland, even though they are fourth, I think there's a lot to be proud of for themselves there as well. I think they played a really good competition.
Yeah, I think my biggest positive from Ireland's tournament overall is actually how quickly the conversation of how do Ireland survive without Johnny Sexton disappeared. Like really, you know, it was a big kind of worry point beforehand. But Jack Crowley, you know, as you said, he certainly has improvements to make in terms of his place kicking percentage in particular. But I've been really impressed with, as you said, how he marshalled the team overall. And he played, I think I saw a stat that said he played every minute. Like he's really, he's just taken that jersey on with supreme confidence. And I think the key with him is that even when he is having a bad game or when he does miss a kick, he doesn't allow it to negatively affect the rest of his play. And I think that's really important to have that moving forward if, you know, if he is going to take this team on to the next level. As you said, very emotional scenes for Peter Romani yesterday. When he was asked after the game, though, whether he's actually retiring, he didn't dodge it, but he said, oh, I don't know yet. But it definitely looked like a goodbye, didn't it? He's always emotional, but it was a whole other level, I think, yesterday.
I think it was funny, you know, when he said that, and you could see he was kind of taking the sip of the water afterwards. You could see him let out a little bit of a giggle as he was doing it.
He's just messing with us.
I could, but you know what? Like, I could even feel it, like, when the full-time whistle went and he hugged every single person that was in the dugout with him. Mm-hmm. And I was just like, oh, you know, this could be it. But then at the same time, I was like, look at Jason Kelsey for the Philadelphia Eagles, you know, last year. We all thought he was retiring.
True.
Like they were ready to make a full documentary about his retirement, and then he played a whole more year, you know. So
yeah.
I think looking at the year ahead, you know, I think if, you know, it's up obviously to Farrell, and, you know, obviously the contract thing is a whole other thing, you know, with that's kind of, I'd say, I don't think it's based on performance. I think it's going to come down to contracts possibly at the end of the day, you know, which is disappointing at the same time. But, like, as we said, we all knew he wasn't going to make another World Cup, you know, like, he's, what, 34 now, you know, or something. So
yeah.
that is fair, and it's going to come eventually. But I think looking at the calendar, I could see him sticking out till the Autumn Internationals at the end of November or whenever it is.
Yeah.
So I could see him. And if not, then I think he'd take the summer tours, like, one last trip away with the lads and, you know, go out on a high there. But look, if it is at the same time, you know, to go out, like, of course, like, they didn't get the Grand Slam that they wanted to, but to come out champions at the end of it, I think it's a really good way to go. And, you know, to have all his family there, like, you know, obviously Jess's wife was there, John, his dad was there, his brothers were there, you know, to have everyone kind of there and to have it in Ireland as well, I think it was deserved. And it's great just to see him take the trophy and hold it up. There's been so many times he's been in the fray and he's been there both, or he's been, like, you know, a leader but not a captain. So to see him get to, like, kind of hoist that trophy up was an emotional moment, you know. Like, my dad's known him since he was quite small because of his involvement in Conn and stuff, so it was an emotional moment for all of us here yesterday evening.
Oh yeah, completely agree. I think everyone around the country felt like we knew him more than we actually do at that point. But let's move on to Wales versus Italy now. It made me very, very sad to see George North hobbling off with just 2 minutes to go, his last international game for Wales. But what was even more sad was that Welsh performance. I think it's come out that Warren Gatland offered to resign in the changing room afterwards, but the CEO of the WRU has turned that down, said absolutely not, we're sticking with you. What do you think that says about where Gatland's head is at right now? And is the excuse of, you know, this is a young team, is that starting to run out of road? Like, what is up next for Wales?
Like, it's so hard to kind of come down on Wales, because I think it's a deeper thing than just the national team. You know, you look at
absolutely
the teams in the URC and stuff, like, they're not getting the performance they wanted. You know, there's not, like, you've seen it last year when the whole, like, was there a report coming out and players, you know, like Ken Owens and stuff like that was trying to stand up to the WRU and, like, changes were sort of made, but they kind of sort of weren't. So it's just, it seems kind of, I hate saying rotten to the core because I feel like that's a bit extreme, but I think it needs to start from the very, very bottom for them to try and build themselves back up again, you know. And it's so hard, you know. Obviously, you look at their captain being 21 years of age, you know, like, and he did a good job, in fairness to him, trying to lead a team that was, you know, I hate saying, like, on a downward spiral, you know, but, like, it's just, it's so hard to come down on them because of what's at stake in the background. You know, I don't think it comes down to the national team. And I think, look, their game yesterday, you know, Italy's on the way up. Like, Italy could have been fourth or third, you know, if they had beaten France, and I think they should have beaten France at that time. So, like, yeah, it's so hard to just bring it down on one game. And you do feel for George North that that's how he went out, you know, like, they didn't win a game this tournament. Like, that's such a way to go out. But at the same time, Italy were just so good yesterday. Oh my God, like, they've really got a good mix of coaches and a good mix of players that are just working for them. You know, and I think, like, even the style of rugby they played yesterday was just so free-flowing, and they just looked like they were enjoying themselves, which was a really, really nice thing to see for them, because, you know, it's been tough for them the last couple of years, and I think they're going to start climbing up those tables now, I think, in a couple of years to come.
Yeah, for sure. I think the what I was really impressed with from Italy was that they put together what was really, really close to an 80-minute performance, and that's always been the thing with Italy. You know, if they did get a win, or if they were ahead in a game, you knew that they would flag in the last 20 minutes, whereas yesterday it was a lot less than the last 20 minutes. Unfortunately, obviously, they did flag a bit towards the very end, and the scoreline flattered Wales hugely in the end. But when you and I spoke ahead of the Six Nations, we said that this could be Italy's year, and I think it's really exciting potentially what they have going forward. As you say, it's not just the coaches, but it's also the players and the style of rugby, and it just feels like it's not a flash in the pan anymore for Italy. These are building blocks that look positive going forward.
Yeah, and I think even if you look at like the ages of players now coming in, you know, like you've got Lewis Lina, who's come in, you know, his father's Michael Lina, the Australian great. You know, I think he's been a really great addition for someone who literally left Harlequins out of nowhere, has just signed for Benetton, and he's straight into that national team and scores a try on his first cap. You know, I think they're really starting to build something that I think coming into this next World Cup cycle, if they can hang on to everyone and keep players injury free, like, and I think they're all the right age, that they'll have matured a little bit more come the 2027 World Cup, you know. So I think it's a really good cycle to get themselves in there, get themselves off that bottom of the table for this Six Nations, and then to continue tipping their way up so that come 2027 they're even probably mid-table and they're competing. Do you know, I think that was probably the most important thing for them coming in, is that they do compete. And like that, I think, you know, I think they're ones to watch for the future, 100%.
For sure. Let's talk about England-France as the final game. I don't know about you, but I felt a bit exhausted by the time that game was over. I never mind how the players must have been feeling. It was absolutely end-to-end, wasn't it? Like, very similar to the under-20s game that had happened the night before.
Yeah. So, yeah, it was very... I just felt like there was a bit of a niggle there, which I think made it a little bit more exciting.
Yes, the crowd were very partisan, weren't they?
Yeah, do you know, and like, it sounds awful, but like, we love making England angry a little bit. So it's so nice to see them a bit pissed off and to kind of run them around a little bit, you know. But even from, I think, a play standpoint, I think the first half nearly, England seemed very, I don't want to say out of it, but they seemed a bit panicked, you know. I felt like they were kind of turning over that ball, which is great, but then they were losing it as fast. You know, I think their calls weren't right. They were quite narrow and quite flat. I just think they didn't really play a style in the first kind of 20, 30 minutes and what they usually play. They seemed quite flustered. I think possibly them losing Furbank in those first couple of minutes, I think, kind of frazzled them a little bit. You know, I think he's a different fullback to, like, you look at the likes of Fred Short and you look at, like, Marcus Smith, who went in for him. Like, he's a completely different fullback to him. I think he's got a bit more bulk in him and a bit more, like, athleticism, if that makes sense a little bit. You know, I think I even said this to my dad watching him a couple of weeks ago. You know, I just think, like, you look at other fullbacks and they're lanky out and you're afraid if they get hit, they might snap in half, you know, kind of thing. Whereas I don't think he kind of has that. Like, he's a very physical one, similar to Keenan, that he's not afraid to catch that ball and take it into contact. I think they missed that maybe a little bit yesterday, because I'm not doubting Marcus Smith. I think he is a really good player, but I think he can sometimes get that ball, and when it comes to contact, he tries to goose step around them, and it gets a bit awkward, and it just makes things a little, when he's moving right and left, it just, I think, throws off maybe the back line a little bit, just from watching them. So I think the fact they lost Fairbank kind of put them out. But I think at the same time, then you look at France. I'm sorry, how good is Ramos?
Oh my God, incredible.
That man can kick from anywhere. And it's just, you know, like, they were missing players. Like, look, think of this team now. Like, they were missing Entomac. They were missing Jalabert. They were missing Antoine Dupont, you know, and I think once probably we heard that Dupont was gone, I don't want to say people wrote off France a little bit, but I think people didn't think much of them. But I think, you know, look at Nolan Le Garrick, who stepped up from Racing, you know, he was supposed to be back up to Luku, and I think, like, he's kind of come out of the framework and hitting 45-metre passes from sidelines or something like that, you know. I think, again, they've got really good stars coming up in the background that, like, even when they are missing their top players, like, it doesn't even matter, you know. Now, I do think that there probably was one or two times where Ramos kicked when he shouldn't have. Do you know, I think I felt like there was a stage where every time he got the ball, he kind of kicked it. And it was a bit like, you know, if he passed it out, there could have been a breakthrough there. But I think, you know, France were the ones, you know, I remember we were talking about this in the preview. You know, we all thought it was France who was going to put it up to us. And then, you know, we got to that first game. We kind of hammered them in Marseille. And I think that took us by surprise a little bit. And then it was like, right, who's next? That could kind of wreck the party. And, you know, I think it was between Scotland and England. And then it was very much, you know, us winning our couple of games and then going through and looking at, right, how are Scotland and England coming on? So I think coming into the end couple of rounds of the Six Nations and stuff, that, like, look, the England loss wasn't great. Do you know, I think we were maybe suffering from a bit of burnout or something like that, or England just came out of the trap so fast. But I think then, like, looking at, like, Scotland to end it, I think, you know, we were worried, but at the same time, I think we were like, right, we can beat them, you know. So at the same time, it's going to be a really interesting next couple of years, I think, for sure.
Definitely. I'm going to ask now for your star of the tournament and your disappointment of the tournament. I'm going to give you the option of whether you wanted to be team or player, because I think it's tough either way. There's so many choices on the player side. But who were you really pleasantly surprised with throughout the Six Nations?
It's so hard, because I think there were so many players that kind of stood out, you know, like your Nolan Le Garrick, you know, Fairbank, names that we've never really heard before, kind of had their breakout moments in this championship. And I think it was a really good like the first Six Nations post World Cup is always a really good championship that allows us to see new names kind of come to the fray and stuff like that. But I think for me, I'm gonna have to go with a team. I have to give it to Italy.
Agreed. You
know, I think it's you know, they've had so many years of wooden spoons. And you know, I think we were kind of looking at things, and we were all thinking it was either going to be Wales or it was going to be Italy. Mm-hmm. And I think everyone was nearly leaning towards Wales a little bit for that wooden spoon. I think we knew they were, there was just, it wasn't a good time for them. But just Italy, I just think finally having something that works for them. You know, I think they've got, like, you look at Sebastian Negri, and you know how much, even though he's South African, how much he gives to the Italian team. And you know, like, Lewis Lina now coming in, I think he's a really, really good addition. Like, imagine if he caught that ball there and that knock on that like, if he got that intercept, that would have been a try of the tournament sort of thing, you know. And then you look at, you know, the teams kind of coming through from the 20s, you know, I think it's going to be, there's like, Ireland, I think we knew would have this tournament, the championship at least, won. So I think looking at the other five teams, you know, it was always going to be a best of the rest sort of thing. And you could see how tight, like, you look at, like, the table itself. Like, it was, you know, what, with France on 15 points, England on 14, Scotland 12, Italy 11. Do you know, what if Italy won that French match?
Yeah.
Do you know, like, I think they really... The fact they have 11 points rather than
incredible.
Zero.
Yeah, you know, incredible.
It's just such an incredible feat. And for them to take on a team like France, you know, if we won't talk about the Gary BC kick, because he should have been allowed to retake it. I'm like,
100%. Yeah.
And look, it was just pure luck of the draw, and it is what it is. But like, I really think they're going to be contenders in the next couple of years, do you know, especially looking at like who's coming through. And yeah, just hopefully now, like that, like, I think Caputo's gone in for shoulder surgery or something there recently, so hopefully he kind of comes out of that okay. But looking at, like, you look at Monte Ioni on one side, you know, Caputo on the backfield, and Lewis Lina then on the other wing.
Amazing,
like,
yeah.
They're going to be such a good trio in these next few years. I really hope so. Now, if we can keep, I know Monte Ioni is a little bit older than them, so if we can keep him in the game, he seems like he wants to be in the game for as long as he can again, which is great. But yeah, I just think they finally found something that works for them. And you can't, like, no matter what team you support, you can't not be happy for them, you know?
agreed. And who was your biggest disappointment then of the tournament?
It's a tough one. And like, you kind of have to say Wales, do you know? And look, I know Welsh rugby is in such a bind and stuff at the moment. And like, I think we thought a lot more of Gatland kind of when he came in. I think we were hoping he'd, not that he'd have the magic wand and kind of make everything right again, but you thought they'd at least be competitive.
Yeah.
You know, and I know that's a hard thing as well. Like, in fairness, if you look at when we played them, you know, they kept us scoreless for 20 minutes. And I think maybe that was like a little bit of light. I think everyone saw and was a bit like, oh, maybe, you know, Wales can go this way. But I think, you know, like that now, like, if they had Lewis Rees-Zamet, would that have made a difference? You know, like Rio Dyer, I think, even though we were hoping he'd get, I suppose, more of a flash in the pan than, like, we thought he'd step up for, like, you know, he's been living in Lewis Rees-Zamet's, like, shadow a little bit. And I think we all expected him to kind of, you know, have his moment to shine, and he kind of didn't. So, you know, is that looking at Wales' style of play? Do they need to, you know, open things up that, like, they can play players who are playing abroad? And, you know, I think Wales need to have a really good look at their infrastructure in general. Sure. You know, how do they build a team, really? Do you know, I think more than anything. And does that mean they keep on Gatlin? I don't know, like, but then they have no other option. Is there anyone else that, like, you could see kind of stepping up to that kind of place? Because, like, it doesn't seem like a good place to be right now. It feels like he's kind of being, I hate saying fed to the lions, it was his own choice to kind of go there and go back there. But, like, you know, like, what faith do you have now going into, you know, the rest of the year, you know, with a head coach that was happy to resign after, like, they lost their last game?
Yeah.
Do you know, where do you put your faith? How do you put your faith in the person that was ready to just walk away? Do you know what I mean? And I know, like, that's a tough call to make, and it's tough for Gatland and stuff like that at the same time, but, you know, like, would he not have, like, kept that a little bit more, maybe on the down low? A little bit,
yes,
or
not come out so with it immediately.
Yeah, just so you can, because it looks, I think it looks really bad that he came off the pitch, went straight to the head of Welsh Rugby and was like, here, do you want my resignation? Like, where does that sit, like, with the players, with other coaching staff?
Absolutely.
You know, it kind of feels like he's being forced to be there. So it's just, it's a hard one to give, but they have to be the disappointment. Do you know, it's just, I think they could have had more, and maybe opportunities just weren't taken for them. So it's just for them, it's where do they go next more than anything, you know? So
yeah,
fingers crossed for them that something seems, it's just funny because, like, this time last year everyone was talking about, oh, should Italy really be in the Six Nations, and should we not put in Georgia because they seem a bit more competitive? And now it's like, right, we look at Wales now and see, like, will people start saying that if they were so quick to judge Italy, you know, in the first place? So yeah, it must be hard being a Welsh fan. That's one thing I'll say anyway.
Yes, at the moment, definitely staring down the barrel, I think, of a tough couple of years of a rebuild. I mean, not that they can't do it, every team goes through these kind of phases, but fingers crossed they will come out the other side better for it. Aoife, thank you so much for joining us again on the Big Red Bench, and we'll hopefully be chatting to you again over the next couple of weeks about the Women's Six Nations. Welcome back to the Big Red Bench. It is Sarah McKenzie Foley with you until 7 p.m. First things first, let's get you a full time report from that Manchester United extra time win against Liverpool. They have officially bagged their spot in the FA Cup semi-finals. Shane Pennington has the final word from Old Trafford.
Manchester United 4, Liverpool 3, and Erik ten Hag's men who move into the... Sorry, I'm going again. In 3, 2, 1. Manchester United 4, Liverpool 3, and it's Erik ten Hag's men then who move into the semi-finals of the FA Cup after an absolute classic here at Old Trafford. Scott McTominay strike put United in front, only for Alexis McAllister and Mo Salah to turn the game on its head and put Liverpool in front. But Anthony's late equaliser sent the tie into extra time, and Harvey Elliott made it 3-2 to the visitors, only for Marcus Rashford to equalise once again. And young Amad Diallo won it for United in the very last minute of extra time. Manchester United 4, Liverpool 3.
Shane Pennington understandably needing more than one take there. He was barely audible above that crowd. A huge, huge win for Manchester United. But we are going back to rugby now, because Sacred Heart Clonakilty were crowned the Pinergy Munster Schools Senior Girls Cup champions on Friday. The West Cork School defeated Closhtonborough of Ennis 20 points to 10 in Virgin Media Park. And Ger McCarthy was there and spoke to Clonakilty captain Kate Nolan after the game.
I'm here with the victorious Sacred Heart Clonakilty captain Kate Nolan following her side's Pinergy Munster Girls Schools Cup final victory at Virgin Media Park. The excitement is just about worn down, Kate. How does it feel to have won that trophy?
Oh, it's an unreal feeling. Like the first half, we didn't know what way it would go, and it's just to get over the line by 10 points. We weren't expecting that, and it's just an unreal feeling, especially with the double now. We can go back to the school and celebrate.
Yeah, great day for the school, great day for rugby in the school, because winning the junior cup final over Bantry, as we said, and also winning the senior cup final. Talk to me about the conditions, because the wind, the rain, and just the slippery underfoot conditions, it was really difficult.
Oh, the conditions, I think there's like a weather warning out there. Like, you could tell with the amount of knock-ons, the slips, it was hard conditions, but I think that's what kind of makes the victory that bit better, just the fact that we had to work so hard for the win. The conditions, yeah, they weren't in our favour at all, but they weren't in either team, so, but yeah, they weren't great, no.
You've done this the hard way. You've beaten the reigning champions 2 years running, Killaloe, to get here, and then you beat a really good team, Ennis, only just on the scene, but were really, really tough opponents. How difficult was it in the first half with the wind, and when you're facing into it, you know, that you had to keep tackling, keep your discipline, and only go in 5 points down?
Yeah, we knew coming into this team that Ennis have a couple of Munster players, and they have Lindsay, their captain, who's currently on the Ireland squad, and we knew coming in that it was not going to be easy at all. And I think we were happy coming into the second half. We had played against the wind. We had been in our own territory for most of the game. We weren't able to kick it. And we just had to make sure that our discipline and everything was up to scratch. And for one of the first games, I'd say our discipline was very good. But yeah, I think it was our discipline and just our heads being in the game that helped us through the first half. And we knew that once we got to the second half and we were down one or two tries, that we still knew we could get over the line.
You've been involved in very big days with Clonakilty RFC, with Munster. What does it mean to be involved with Sacred Heart?
I think it's everyone's kind of dream to kind of represent the school and to win something, and for it to be the second year of rugby in the school and to win this is some achievement, and it's an amazing feeling to win something so big with your classmates and people that you've been going to school for the last 6 years, and it's a great feeling.
Finally, I assume the homework will be gone for the rest of the week, and that'll be the first of the demands from these two groups.
We'll see now with 6 year and stuff, the Orals next week, so I don't think that'll be happening, but we'll take tonight off anyway and have a bit of celebrations, yeah.
Congratulations, Kate Dolan, a fantastic day for you, for the Sacred Heart School. Well done.
Thank you.
And I also spoke to the coach, Rob Barry, after the game to get his reaction.
Now I'm here with Rob Barry, the coach of the Victoria Sacred Heart Secondary School, Pinergy Munster Senior Schools Cup winners and the Junior Cup winners. First of all, congratulations on the double success. A fantastic day for the school, fantastic day for rugby, and fantastic day for sport in the school. You must be over the moon.
Yeah, we're absolutely delighted. Yeah, the girls have put on a lot of work over the year now in with their club team, you know, and that just transferred over into the school. We're just very lucky that the club teams are so strong down in Clonakilty, and they transferred as a unit pretty much the team over into the school, and they've such a love of rugby, and they're so good at it. Yeah,
The communication and the relationship between the school and the club is something that we spoke about in commentary. Other schools will take note of that, and you would like to see other schools, possibly like yourselves, take up rugby as a sport, because look at the day that you've had today, the excitement, the atmosphere.
Yeah, they were a massive support, everything from jerseys to balls to coaching, they've helped us massively. Yeah, and we've been really appreciative of all the help, and yeah, without the club, yeah, we wouldn't have any rugby in the school. So.
A word for Colostomy Ennis, because at half time they were seemingly in the driving seat. It was a horrible day for rugby, a lot of mistakes, which you would expect, but the manner in which your team showed their discipline and their defence and took their chances when they came, a fantastic comeback.
Yeah, they had a lot of dangerous players that we kind of knew that they did possibly score tries, and yeah, they just flew. Those players, yeah, really showed up today and scored some great tries. Yeah, but we just knew if we kind of stuck in thereabouts at half time, we had the strong wind behind us in the second half, that, you know, we'd be in with a good chance, and that was the plan, and luckily it paid off. Yep.
Great night of celebrations ahead, two cups to bring back to the school, a lovely day for you and for the school itself.
Yeah, we're going back to Clonakilty now, and we'll do a bit of a victory lap down there and enjoy ourselves. Yeah,
well done, Rob, congratulations.
Thank you.
And finally, let's hear from Munster Women's PRO Wendy Keenan on what the game means for women's rugby in Munster overall.
No, at the end of a very long but a fantastic day here at Virgin Media Park, the Pinergy Munster Senior and Junior Girls Cup finals are in the books. I'm delighted to be joined by Munster Women's Rugby PRO Wendy Keenan. What a fantastic day, first of all. Before we talk about what happened, the spectacle, the crowds, Bantry, Clonakilty and Ennis well represented, and what a great day for Munster Women's Rugby.
Oh, a fantastic day. I mean, the atmosphere is just infectious there, isn't it? I mean, the weather conditions are horrendous, but you wouldn't even know that by the skill that's been displayed to us today. It's a wonderful occasion. Four different teams, you know what I mean, in the finals. None of these were in the finals last year, and what I mean, to do the double, we'll talk about that in a second, is a very special day, but just a win-win all for the clubs, for the schools, for the coaches, managers and the parents.
Yeah, and as you said, even with the bad weather, we had two fantastic spectacles. The growth of women's rugby, it's no longer a cliche, it is real. From your point of view and Munster Women's Rugby point of view, you're hoping that some schools who don't currently get involved will have seen this today, will have seen the newspaper headlines over the last couple of days, the radio coverage, the social media coverage, and will be encouraged to maybe enter a team next year.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we look at the senior final here today with Ennis and Clonakilty. We have to mention the clubs. This has been like a joint venture, if you like. They've supported each other. It's a progressive structure where the clubs have reached out to the schools, and we've seen that now by them going home with, you know what I mean, being finalists here today. To be involved is fantastic. To reach a final is very special, and not everybody reaches it. But the journey that these have, you know, these teams have gone on over the last couple of months, I suppose they've been preparing this for since before Christmas. But we will see a growth. We will see a growth now, especially. We've got a double the amount of women's development officers working on the ground. They'll get out to the schools, they get out to the clubs. So there's going to be more interaction, so we can only see this tournament increasing. We've already met and looked at the structures. We're going to have to start this tournament before Christmas next year. Before the final even took place, this meeting had to take place.
Well, that's a nice problem to have. We finish up by just mentioning we have the Sacred Heart Clonakilty, not just the school but the club, Clonakilty RC, and one of the clubs in West Cork where there's a huge growth area now. Fantastic day for them.
Oh, wonderful. And just as I mentioned, you know, driven by the club and the school, working progressively together. I mean, that's a really good model for the development of the game, and I suppose, you know, for the players as well to see this. And I have to mention some of the players from both schools, because we had some unbelievable performances for both. I have to mention from Clonakilty their captain, Kate Nolan. I mean, she spoke so well at the end, you know, with her speech and all her thank yous. Rachel Toomey, Imaroni, I mean, they were fantastic. And then we have to mention some of the Ennis girls, Lindsay Clark, Sally Kelly had a fantastic game at 8. I mean, it was just a fantastic game, a spectacle of rugby, I'd call it.
It certainly was, and that's as good a summation as we could hope for today. Wendy Keenan, congratulations on a fantastic day for Munster Women's Rugby, and more in the future, hopefully.
And thanks very much. And I suppose before we finish here, I have to thank Pinergy, you know, coming on board this year to sponsor the senior cup. I mean, that's another step in the development of the game as well, to have that funding coming in underneath the structures.
Excellent stuff. We'll talk again soon.
Thank you.
Let's pivot now to Gaelic Games, because Darren and Ciara O'Sullivan both recently announced their retirements from senior inter-county football with Cork, and there was nobody better placed than Ger McCarthy to speak to the two sisters about their decision. So let's take a listen out to that conversation.
Now, here on the Big Red Bench, it is a real thrill to be joined by two of Cork GAA, Cork LGFA, two of the finest footballers that this county, male or female, have ever produced. And they announced their retirement within the space of a couple of hours of each other, which we're going to inquire about. But the Mourne Abbey stalwarts, Ciara and Darren O'Sullivan, have stepped away from the inter-county scene in Cork after a glittering career, each of them contributing hugely to the success both on and off the pitch, and setting standards that will have to be followed by the next generation of football. Here on the bench, they've always been very good to us and very kind to us with their time and with their interview time, and this is the last time we will speak as an inter-county in terms of interview, but not the last. I think we'll speak to one another when it comes to club, and more about that anon. But it is a real thrill to have them both on here with us. Ciara, you're very welcome to the bench. How are you?
Thanks very much. Good turnout.
Good stuff. And Darren, you're welcome to the bench. How are you?
Thanks, Ger. Yeah, delighted to be here. Thanks very much for having us.
Yeah, I'm going to start with Ciara, if you don't mind, Darren, because I think over the years she suffered far more injuries than you did. I'm not saying you didn't, but she suffered some pretty serious injuries down through her inter-county career. And I just wanted to put it to you first, Ciara, the timing and the decision to step away now in 2024, how much of that was down to the wear and tear on the body, and or was it just down to life taking over?
Yeah, predominantly, I suppose it was more life and, you know, wanting to have what others would probably describe more of a normal life and go on holidays, go away for weekends and stuff like that. Obviously playing inter-county is a huge commitment, and you know, when you've done it for a few years, I wouldn't change any of it. But at the same time, just was time to kind of step away and as I say, just do different things in life. And I suppose at my age as well, like, you know, 33, I've probably on the older side of intercounty, you know, you would be conscious as well of the toll on your body, and being conscious of being able to be as fit as you need to be intercounty, and to be as good as you need to be. And I suppose while that wasn't the main reason, it would be something that would be in the back of your mind as well.
Was it an easy decision, Ciara? Not easy, but how difficult was it to just finally make that choice?
I thought it was easy until last Friday, to be honest, when it was actually publicly announced, because up until then, I suppose, I don't want to speak for you, Duren, but Duren and I had, we've known with a good few months that we were retiring, and we were both happy with our decisions and made kind of peace with it, I suppose. And then Friday, when it came out officially, yeah, I was kind of an emotional wreck on Friday, way more so than I thought I would be, to be honest. I thought I had, you know, accepted it and come to terms with it. But yeah, I suppose when you're kind of ending something after 16 years, no matter how much you're how much time you've had to prepare, it kind of is something that's going to, you know, it's going to take time to get used to.
And the same for you, Duren. I mean, I wasn't downplaying at all some of the injuries that you've suffered, certainly in the recent years as well, in the red jersey of Cork. I mean, it was obviously in your mind for a while that the time was right to step away. But when that moment comes, like it did for Ciara, and then you get the realisation and all these people saying nice things about you and contacting you, how difficult was it to, did it hit home then?
Yeah, I think Friday was the kind of full stop after our football career with Cork. It was kind of a weird one, though, because, you know, our close family would have known. Me and Ciara had talked about it for a good few months. So I think, like Ciara said, we thought we had accepted it and were, you know, content with our decision. And then people texting, ringing, just seeing articles and stuff. It was kind of, I suppose, overwhelming. Maybe it would be a good word to describe it. But yeah, definitely it has sunk in now. And yeah, looking forward to doing different things, as Ciara said. Not, I suppose, having a Cork fixtures calendar and Cork training dictating every kind of decision you make. So that kind of freedom and freshness is something to look forward to.
How are your parents handling this, you know, that you're going to be around a bit more? Because I know, I don't know them well, but I know them well enough to know that your dad, I was worried about when this came out. I actually thought of him. I was saying, okay, I know he's going to be obviously, you know, delighted that you're stepping away now, but the time is right, just from your own personal point of view and for life. But from Cork's point of view, and probably from Ron Abbey, I suppose, maybe during did that soften the blow that you announced? I like the way you said, look, you know, we'll still be playing club football. Was mum and dad okay with all of this?
Yeah, look, I think the main thing is, and I know it sounds a bit cliche, but they just want us to see us happy and to see us healthy. And I suppose both our bodies kind of maybe made that decision that bit easier for us. And there is a huge difference between intercounty training and club training. So I think they're happy to see us maybe just take that bit of a step back and enjoy club football. They'll still be out supporting the Cork ladies footballers. Mam's niece is captain, so Maura's captain. So yeah, I think that won't affect their attendance at matches or anything like that. And as you said, yeah, still very proud to be involved with the club, and they'll be roaring and shouting at all those matches, no doubt.
They most certainly will, the most ardent of supporters, in fairness, the two of them. Ciara, I mean, I've interviewed a lot of players down through the years in different codes and different sports, and they make the decision. When I ask them, you know, what will you miss the most? It's very hard to put that into context, but most people do mention the dressing room and the camaraderie and the crack, because it's taken so seriously, you know, intercounty football, ladies, LGFA and Camogie and all these things at the highest level, as it should be. But it's the bonds you make with people that you mightn't have known from other clubs, and the bonds you make over the years through good times and certainly through bad times, or through lean times, and certainly the last few years for Cork. Would that be the case for you, that you'll miss that? I mean, you have your Mourne Abbey teammates, but it's all those other players that you got to know along the way, and rivals as well, that you got to know down through the years.
Yeah, definitely. It is something that I'm going to miss hugely. Even I was talking to Orla Finn last week, and we were kind of laughing at one day coming home on the bus here, and you'll remember this, Orla Farmer whipped out a load of pictures going back probably 10, 15 years of us at various matches in All-Ireland down to the year. And we were just kind of reminiscing on the bus home that last year, 2 years ago, I think. And you kind of forget all the fun and crack you had until you do something like that. But yeah, the dressing room is, you know, even more so in nights of just training rather than matches, because there's always that bit more tense on a day of a match. But at training, like, you would have great crack. And, you know, some of my best friends are people that I wouldn't have met if I wasn't playing with Cork, because, you know, I wouldn't have got the opportunity to play with them and spend time with them for years, I suppose. So definitely will miss that element of it. But I think the thing about Cork football is, you know, those friendships, I think, will continue long after we've finished playing. And you see that, like, you know, I had a good few of the girls who retired a good few years ago were on last week as well. So I think, you know, we've made such a good bond that'll last, hopefully, long after we've finished playing.
I have a very good feeling it will, if your Instagram accounts are anything to go by. Darren, the same for you. I mean, you've come across so many people in your career, both at club and intercounty, that's one of the things that comes with retirement, that you're going to have to give that up. You still have your club scene and club environment, but I would imagine you'd echo what Ciara said there, that the friends you've made along the way at intercounty level, friends and rivals that you've met from other counties, was something special.
Yeah, I suppose that would have been a big thing, because we're very proud club people and take club football very seriously. So, you know, girls in inverted commas that you think you hate when you're playing against them, and then you come into a Cork dressing room and it's like, God, you know, she's great crack. So I loved that side of it. And I suppose Roisin Phelan, who announced her retirement this week as well, she texted me today being like, geez, it's mad. We played, I think, 18 years of intercounty football together. So, yeah, I suppose that's mad. There's a lot of friendships that go back a long way, and we'd all have each other's back. Even the girls went out now recently after a league game, and you just be jealous of that, you know, the nights out and the dressing room and the crack, the buses up and overnight stays to away games and stuff. So, yeah, I think that side of things is tough to leave behind. But we had some great years. And, yeah, I think we'll look back on it with good memories and smiles more so than anything.
Absolutely. And Roisin Phelan, we want to wish her all the best as well. It is in the pipeline. We will hopefully talk to her on the bench over the coming weeks about her fantastic career as well. Darren, there's too many managers, too many coaches, too many people that would have helped you along the way all those years that you've been playing, both for Mornabbey and for Cork at various intercounty grades. But the guy I wanted to ask you both about before we finish up is Shane Ronayne, because he's still current Cork senior football LGFA manager. Things aren't going well this year, clearly. Results aren't going well. Performances are improving. It's a new team. It's a young team. So it's going to come again. It'll take a bit of time. But from your experience of Shane, how important, Darren, or can you put into context just how important he was to you in your football career for both Mornabbey and for Cork?
I don't think I can, to be honest. Sure, he's done an awful amount for me, say, personally, on the pitch, off the pitch, through injuries. And, like, you'd pick up the phone to Shane and nothing was ever an issue. You know, whether it was to buy a new pair of football boots, or, you know, could you pick me up a gum shield on the way to training, or just asking him advice about, you know, different things. I remember one year in particular, I was going very poor, and I knew it myself, and I was very close to being dropped, and then you feel extra pressure to perform, and, like, it felt like the walls were closing in, and I just goes, I'm going to pick up the phone to Shane. So I rang him and just asked him, and that's something that will always be the case, regardless of not playing under him anymore. But yeah, look, I the girls aren't going as they'd like to at the moment, but if there was one person I'd want on my side, it'd be Shane Ronayne. I think, firmly believe, he can get them out of the corner they're in at the moment. He gets a lot of stick of, you know, his training styles or whatever, but you can't argue with the success that has brought him at club, college football and intercounty football. So I think if there's any man for the job, Shane will do it.
Very well said. I would imagine, Ciara, you would echo those sentiments.
Yeah, I would. To be honest, we've been lucky enough to be involved with Shane for years, both club and county, and see just how good he is. And you know, I think a lot of has been made of where the girls are in the league at the moment. But like, if you step back and look at it objectively, it's going to take time. A few matches isn't going to tell the girls' season. It's going to take time. You've lost a good few players from last year, and it's not anything to do with caliber of players or anything like that. It's just that it takes time to build up a new panel and new squad. And players are young, and it's going to be great to get the league experience. And I've no doubt, whatever happens in the league, in Cork, you're not measured by the league anyway. So I've no doubt, come Championship, I don't want to build them up, because I think Cork are more dangerous when you come in under the radar, and which no doubt they will be. But I'd have full faith in the girls and in Shane's ability to get them where they need to be come Championship time.
Very well said from the both of you. Well, look, we could stay on for hours talking about the careers, the highs, the lows, but I think we've been through that enough down through the years in the interviews. I just want to say, firstly, on behalf of Corkshire FM and the Big Red Bench, you've always been very good to us with time for interview time, and some of those interviews were not easy to do immediately after a loss. Thankfully, there was more wins than losses. But Cork LGFA Intercounties loss, the standards you set, not what you did on the pitch, but the standards you set in the dressing room and in training and on the pitch are still, you know, they're the benchmark, and that, I think that's your biggest legacy of what you've left behind. I hope you understand that. That's not playing to the crowd, that's just a fact. I wish you well in your club career. I knew as soon as I saw the intercounty announcements, retirements, and I said, and Darren told me we're going back club training, I thought that's exactly what all the clubs around Cork really needed to hear, that the O'Sullivans are going to be giving more time to Moore Abbey in the upcoming league and championship. So we will catch up with each other again. But and I also wanted to mention Rory Noonan, because I know he echoes my sentiments. We've been on the beat quite a bit, Rory longer than I, but we've been privilege to watch you in action, and really, really thankful for all the time that you've given us interviews. And as I said, some of those interviews weren't easy after particular losses, but you were always available, always there. And I wish you well in intercounty retirement and all that extra time. I look forward to the Instagram accounts and the late nights and the updates and the retirees and wherever that takes us over the next few weeks and months. But thank you from everybody.
Thanks,
on the Big Red Bench.
Thanks,
we really
very
appreciate
much.
It.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, fantastic conversation there between Ger and the O'Sullivan sisters, and you'll be able to listen back to that if you missed anything or if you just want to take another listen on the Big Red Bench podcast, which will be available shortly after I'm off air this evening. Obviously, after that very extended match between Manchester United and Liverpool, there was a bit of a wait for the FA Cup semi-final draw, but that has now been made, and Coventry will be taking on Manchester United, and the holders, Manchester City, have been drawn against Chelsea. So one of those fixtures is going to be very different from the other, but you know, stranger things have happened, so it'll be a very interesting day, to say the least. And they're each going to be played out over the weekend of Saturday April 20th and Sunday April 21st. Obviously no semi-final replays, so anybody that's in a draw, as they were today, after 90 minutes is going to go to that extra time and, if necessary, penalties. But that is everything from me this evening, folks. Thank you, as always, for tuning in. It has been Sarah McKenzie Foley here with you for the Sunday edition of the Big Red Bench. As I said, if you want to take a listen back to anything, the podcast will be available shortly after I'm off air. But in the meantime, enjoy the rest of your Paddy's Day celebrations and stay tuned for Mags with Green Arm Red up next.